Bloody Mountaineers. You already know who it is. It's Kaylee Riccatelli and
Sydney Wentz.
And you're listening to the
girls
who
get
it slay. Okay, so in my script outline that I have entitled, What is Blood Yapping About? Our first topic of the day is basketball.
Okay.
Of course, because who isn't talking about women's basketball right now? But we're talking about it today because the WNBA draft is today.
Tonight.
Yeah. Which is, today is Monday, April 15th. So by the time this comes out, the draft is already going to happen. And we're probably going to, like, recap it.
Re-yap it and cap it?
Yeah. Re-yap it, recap it next week. But no cap. Sorry. It's probably going to be Caitlin Clark first to the Indiana Fever, which is not what Michael Shea passed around to the women at Purdue University.
That was crazy. So, okay. So I love SNL and I'm very, very in on the SNL lore. And I was looking at the so there's a bunch of Reddit pages, and that's how people, like, who are really familiar with the writers and all these things. Uh-huh. There's a bunch of Reddit pages. And apparently the behind the scenes lore is he was told it was going to either be Sarah Sherman or not Chloe Trost, the other Chloe, the blonde Chloe whose last name I cannot remember right now, and it's Chloe Fineman. It was supposed to be either Sarah Sherman or Chloe Fineman pretending to be Caitlin Clark.
Dressed
she was
going
to be in, like,
Clark.
A wig in the Iowa jersey and, like, making jokes. And Colin Jost or Lauren Michaels, one of the two, got a hold of Caitlin Clark and she agreed to do it.
Context, Caitlin Clark was on the Weekend Update on SNL this past weekend.
Caitlin Clark was on SNL and it was freaking phenomenal. I'm kind of officially back on the CC train because of it. It made me like
and
her.
And she came on right after Michael Shea made a joke about them retiring her jersey, and they said her, or he said her jersey was a signed apron that they were going to hang in Iowa's basketball.
We'll get to that joke in a second. But she comes out and she's, like, in this, like, cute little varsity jacket, her hair straight, and her, like, makeup.
She looked so good.
And it was just so, so charming. Like, it was so charming. Like, she was so adorable. And then my favorite thing ever is Michael Che and Colin Jost love to mess with each other. And Colin Jost had a super cut of all of the times that Michael Che was making fun of women's basketball.
Because Caitlin came in and said something about, she's like, you do like to joke about women's sports.
Mm-hmm.
And then Michael Che said, no, I don't do it that much. And Colin Jost said, well, actually, you do. And I've actually taken the liberty of making a super cut. And it played a reel of,
like,
every
it was like five women jokes, and they were only that was the only ones from the last month. Was from the last four episodes.
That's
a
gross.
Weekend Update.
That's gross. No wonder he doesn't have a girlfriend.
So, okay, I would like to say for the record, I love both Michael Che and Colin Jost. But they do make a lot of very controversial jokes. They are often the two people that are in the most hot water.
And that's what the Weekend Update is for.
Yes,
but
of course
also,
it is.
Zoink Scoob, maybe don't do that.
Yeah. But Caitlin Clark was wonderful. It was really freaking cute. She did so good.
Her delivery was phenomenal.
And the joke she made, essentially the joke she made is she handed Michael a signed apron after he made the apron joke, and he goes, I can't wait to give this to my girlfriend. And she,
you don't have a girlfriend, Michael.
So crassly, so quickly goes, you know you don't have a girlfriend, Michael.
He said, that's right. And then he kept going.
Literally. Like, no, it was so good. It was so fun. It was that SNL has been, like, back on their game of getting, like, really cool, really fun guest stars. They had Ryan Gosling hosting. Chris Stapleton was the musical guest. Emily Blunt was there. She also had a couple of her teammates with her.
Like, yes, she did.
In the audience, because they were there for good nights.
Yes.
And Ryan Gosling actually, I think he thanked the Iowa women's basketball team. But no, I think it's kind of, I think he thanked them in there in his, like, goodnight speech for them, like,
aww,
being there.
Well, because all of the draft, all of, like, the potential draftees for the
WNBA
draft are in New York. And they all took a picture together at the top of the Empire State Building. Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
So it's like Angel Reese, Cameron Brink, Caitlin Clark, all of them, and their little WNBA orange hoodies, which I want one, by the way. And they're all just standing at the top of the Empire State Building, and they take a picture together, and they look so cute and so happy. And they're all besties, and I love it.
So here's my theory, though, and I'm going to gaslight Gatekeep Girl Boss with the WNBA draft. Is everyone's talking about how Caitlin Clark is going to the Indiana Fever?
What if she doesn't?
That's what I'm saying. What if she doesn't? What if they literally decide to pull a, like, use guys on us?
A what?
A use guys? Like, you instead of you guys, it's use guys? They're going to pull one over on people. No, okay. I think it would. I mean, obviously, she's going to be the first round draft, but. Like I
oh,
just
she's gonna be for like
she is the
top three,
she is
least.
The she is the one of one, but I just think it's so funny. But no, I thought it was sweet that she, like everything that she did is the epitome of what Weekend Update is supposed to be. Is she came in, she made some jokes, she got some good laughs, she had a really sincere little sweet part in there where she thanked all the people came before her.
That
she thanked Dawn Staley, she thanked Maya Moore, like all of these different people. And then, she like finished it with a joke. Like it was like of my SNL things, that was like a top five moment of SNL. That was really, it was really well done, really well timed. And I also love that he had no idea she was going to be there.
And I love that all of the jokes were like at his expense as like a rebuttal kind of, it was really
the
funny.
Purdue University one was but friggin' crazy.
But no, because actually the line that she said, because she was thanking all the women who came before her, she said, thanks for kicking down the door so I can walk in, which I thought was really sweet. And it kind of leads into our next story.
Okay.
So the next thing that's happening today is the 128th Boston Marathon.
I saw commercials for the Boston Marathon over like Masters weekend, and it was really cute. Like there were cute commercials. It was like a guy running with prosthetic legs, like a woman running. Like it was just like different things about like why you run. Like it was cute. I liked it. Good marketing.
So we're gonna be talking about women in the Boston Marathon today.
Slay.
So the 128th Boston Marathon is today, April 15th. Which, by the time this comes out, it's already going to be over. Which, actually, I wonder if they've already started it, because it should start in the morning, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Boston Marathon men's and women's wheelchair divisions begin at 9:02 and 9:05, respectively. The professional men's race starts at 9:37, while the women's race kicks off at 9:47. Why does the Minneapolis Fox have up-to-date things on the Boston Marathon?
The what?
They have, like, up-to-date, like, updates on the Boston Marathon. The Minneapolis Fox. That's kind of crazy. But, yeah, here it is. The Boston Globe has live updates, so I will look at those when that loads. But, so the first Boston Marathon, little history on the Boston Marathon. The first Boston Marathon was run in 1897.
Oh, wow.
With 15 people.
Oh.
And now there's, like, thousands of people who compete in the Boston Marathon. With 500,000 spectators, it is the most watched sporting event in Boston. They line the route. They line all 26.2 miles of the route. But very interesting. So the first Boston Marathon, like I said, was 1897. Women were not officially allowed to run in the Boston Marathon until 1972.
Oh, wow.
Which was around Title IX time. So that was kind of when women's sports were starting to get the recognition they deserve, because it was believed that women were not, quote unquote, physiologically able to run a marathon. But that did not stop them. So actually, before women were even allowed to officially run, the first woman to run the course unofficially was Roberta, or Bobby, Gibb in 1966 at the age of 23. So I guess she had applied to run, sent in an application or whatever to get a bib number. And then she, you know, got something in the mail from the organizers, and she thought, oh, it's my bib number. And they told her that she was not allowed to run in the marathon because women were not able to run marathons. At the time, in 1966, they were believed to be too weak and too fragile to run in a marathon. As Catherine Switzer, who we'll get to in a second, but as she put it, the belief at the time was that women who did intense exercises, such as long-distance running, quote, were going to get big legs, grow hair on your chest, and your uterus was going to fall out, which she said to Sky Sports News in 2021. So this was very much a lot of gender discrimination at the time. And the belief at the time was that women were not able to do it, like physiologically were not able to. And it wasn't really backed by any substantial science, but people believed it nonetheless and allowed that to dictate who got to run and who didn't. But the first woman to unofficially run was Bobby Gibb in 1966. She was disqualified because of her gender, but that did not stop her. She pulled up to the start line wearing a hoodie and her brother's Bermuda shorts as a disguise. And she hid in a forsythia bush right near the start line, waited for the men to start, let about half of them get through. She popped into the crowd, started running. She didn't have a bib number or anything. She was just unofficially running the race. And she said that people started cheering her on, like, along the course, because once she started running, she took her hoodie off and, like, took off her disguise. And they were, one of these days I'm not going to bump this mic during an episode.
We only have two left.
I thought we only had one left.
Oh, we only have one left after this. Holy crap.
Yeah. I'm not going to talk about it. But maybe the last episode I won't bump it. But so as she started running, she took her disguise off and people were like, oh my gosh, it's a girl. And she said that she would get, comments like, you go, girly, like cheering her on. And actually, because I read up on her, the difference between her and Catherine Switzer is actually insane. So Bobby Gibb, I think, because this was like 1966, mm-hmm. I think she had to be like hippie extraordinaire. Because she drove a VW van, Volkswagen van. And she was kind of like a free spirit woman, from what I read. She took a lot of road trips. She drove solo across the United States when she was 20. And she said wherever she would stop, she would run like 40 miles a day.
Oh, my God.
She ran the marathon when she was 23. And in this story I found on, is it JSTOR, I think? JSTOR, I don't know if that's how. Nonprofit Library for the Intellectually Curious is the official's tagline of that. So it's just a story about her on there. She said running was like a spiritual act for her. And she said that watching the Boston Marathon for the first time in 1964, she thought, here are some people who feel the same way that I feel about being a human animal on the earth. This incredible dignity, strength, and endurance it takes to be human, to live a life. So she felt that like long distance running was kind of symbolic of life itself, which I think is beautiful. And so this solo trip that she took across the country when she was 20, she was driving her Volkswagen van. She would run 40 miles a day. And she was running in nurse's shoes because women, like, they didn't make running shoes for women because women couldn't run. And she didn't have a coach either for, like, training for the marathon. She kind of just did it because she could. And so when she was 23 and she went back, her parents were from Boston. So she went to Boston where her parents lived and wanted to enter the Boston Marathon but couldn't. So then she ran it anyway. They said that she stuffed herself on roast beef and apple pie the night before, which she later said definitely made her stomach hurt during the race. But yeah, and she did the same thing, entered unofficially in 66, 67, and 68. And I believe ran it the same way. Didn't officially enter, but hid in a bush near the start. Or, like, okay, pulled up in a disguise and ran the marathon. And the marathon that she ran in 1966, the first woman to run the course, and she did it unofficially, She finished in 3 hours, 21 minutes. And that was faster than 2/3 of the men in the race. So, you know, women couldn't run marathons, but here she was beating 2/3 of the men entered in the Boston Marathon at the age of 23 when she wasn't even allowed to enter. So,
heck yeah.
Slay Bobby Gibb. And the first woman to officially run was Catherine Switzer mm-hmm. in 1967. Actually, so Bobby Gibb now is an artist and scientific researcher
mm-hmm.
who she apparently still, like, at the age of like 70 or so, was still mm-hmm. running like an hour a day, which is crazy. I'm going to be immobile when I'm 70, and you can't force
me to
get up and
run. I'm going to be immobile next year.
That's real. Me too, honestly. So Bobby Gibb still slaying. The first woman to officially run the Boston Marathon was Catherine Switzer in 1967. So she was 20 years old at the time, and she entered the race as KV Switzer, which wasn't to hide her gender. She said that's just how she always signed her name. So, because some people were like, oh, she entered as KV Switzer, so nobody knew it was a woman. But she said that was actually just how I always signed it. So, and just out of habit, she entered as KV Switzer. And she had talked to, I think it was a running coach at Syracuse. She was like, I want to do the Boston Marathon. And he said, women can't run long distances. Like, you're not built for it. She was like, I want to run the Boston Marathon. And he said, okay. He said, I'm going to need you to prove to me that you can do it in practice. And then he was like, if you can run a marathon distance in practice, I will take you to Boston. And, like, we'll do this thing officially. And she said, okay. And she ran marathon distance plus 5 miles in practice. To prove to her, like, he trained her. And then she proved that she could run a marathon plus 5 miles, which, by the way, is 31.2 miles. And he said, okay, I'll take you to Boston. So he took her to Boston. She entered the marathon. And she didn't have to hide because mm-hmm. they had already accepted her as an entry. And she wore bib number 261. Now that's going to come in later. And she said at the start line of the race, because she had her coach with her and then she had her boyfriend at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually they ended up getting married.
Aww.
And then divorced later.
Oh.
But... Wow. But
men suck anyway. It's fine.
Yeah. So she had her coach and her boyfriend at the time with her. And she said that at the start, everybody was cheering, super excited, super supportive because, like, oh my gosh, there's a woman lined up. Like, because mm-hmm. remember, Bobby Gibb couldn't actually line up because she wasn't allowed. Mm-hmm. She was hidden in a bush. So this is the first woman who actually lined up at the start for the Boston Marathon. And she started off running in 2 miles into the race. She said that's when the press vans started pulling up beside her. And they were yelling at her, asking, like, what are you trying to prove? When are you going to drop out? Like, are you an activist? Are you... Because this was a woman. They're like, why are you a woman running a race? Like, what are you trying to prove? Because they thought that women ran long distances to prove something. And to her, because in an interview with Sky Sports News, which I think might be based in England somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because she also does things with the London Marathon.
Sky Sports is it's British Sports Network.
That's what
because
I thought.
They use Sky Sports and Ted Lasso.
Okay.
They're all Sky Sports.
Oh, I remember that now.
Anchors.
I remember that
yeah.
now. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So in an interview with Sky Sports, she said that she remembers like the press vans pulling up asking her what to prove. And she said that to her, she was like, I didn't need to prove anything. I already ran this distance in practice plus 5 miles. She's like, I could do this again. She's like, I was running because I wanted to. And the belief at the time was that women couldn't. She was like, mm-hmm. so obviously I was there to prove that women could.
Yeah.
And she was like, I felt that if I dropped out that, you know, I would be doing women a disservice because they wouldn't let them
mm-hmm.
into the race again. So she's like, I felt like I needed to finish so that women in the future would have the ability to enter, which is where mm-hmm. that kicking down the door to let other women walk through kind of reminded me of, because mm-hmm. she understood the responsibility of this. But she was 20 years old.
Yeah.
So by the second mile of the race, the press vans had caught up to her. And then, like, the van for, like, the race directors and all that mm-hmm. pulled up. And she said, this little, I think, Scottish man, I forget if he was Scottish or Irish. His name is Jock Semple. He was a co-race director.
Were they like driving alongside her as she was running?
Like driving alongside the course. But the press vans were all focused on her. And then the up came the van with the mm-hmm. race directors. And she said that the press were kind of like picking on the co-race director because he was like known to be a fiery kind of guy. And they're like, hey, there's a girl in your race. Like, why'd you let a girl in your race? And he, it kind of egged him on. He jumped out of the van and tried to physically remove Switzer from the race. There's pictures of him grabbing at her sweatshirt. Sorry, I'm showing Sydney a picture right now.
Oh, my God.
So he jumps out of this van, sprints up to her. Mind you, this is a distance run, so she's mm-hmm. not running fast at this point. It's 2 miles in. He sprints up to her, and she said she could hear his shoes because they sounded different than the runner's shoes because he was wearing, like, leather shoes mm-hmm. in a suit. And he sprints up to her, grabs her sweatshirt, and is trying to pull her numbers off. So her 261 mm-hmm. bib, he's trying to pull it off so that she couldn't finish the race because if you don't have a bib number, you don't get, like, an official mm-hmm. time. And so she's, like, trying to pull away from him. He grabs, like, the corner of her number, and he's, like, trying to pull her off the course. Like, you can't be in this race, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And her coach who's running beside her, stands up for her, and he's, like, I trained her. She's fine. Like, she can run. And he, like, this guy's, like, woman can't run this race. Like, he's physically trying to remove her. And then her boyfriend, I think his name was Tom Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Was a former All-American football player.
Tackles him.
Runs over, shoulder checks this guy. She said sent him flying. So this race director's flying. He just got shoulder checked by an All-American football player. She said her coach looked at her and said, quote unquote, run like hell. So she sprinted ahead. And then she said this whole race, she was still getting kind of like berated by the press. Like, what are you trying to prove? Like, why mm-hmm. are you here? And then I think they kind of left her alone eventually. And this was also, like, a cold, like, rainy day. So that was not helping at all. But when all was said and done, she finished the Boston Marathon in 4 hours and 20 minutes.
Whoa.
Yeah. So Bobby Gibb, I forget if I had mentioned this, the girl who entered in 66, mm-hmm. she finished in 3 hours, 21 minutes.
Holy crap.
This is 26 miles in 3 hours and 21 minutes. And then Catherine Switzer for her first Boston Marathon finished in 4 hours, 20 minutes. Which I'm not sure what the weather was like when Gibbs ran it. In ability and weather could account
but
for
is, is she the first woman to win it, or has a woman never won it before?
I don't know if a woman has overall won it before. I need to double check that. But no, Switzer did not win it mm-hmm. in 67. Mm-hmm. But that was the year that she was the first officially entered woman.
Yeah.
Or the first woman with a bib number. Women weren't officially entered as, like, women until 72.
Mm-hmm.
But then in 1974, so that was 6 years.
Yeah, 6 years later.
7 years.
7 years, six, yes. Seven. We know numbers.
Yes.
Journalism majors can do math.
So 7 years after her first Boston Marathon, she won the New York City Marathon in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's overall or just she was the first woman to finish.
Yeah.
But she won the New York City Marathon in 1974. In 1975, I forget if she won the Boston Marathon or if this was just her best. Ran the Boston Marathon in 1975 in 2 hours and 51 minutes.
Whoa.
Like, hello?
What's the average running time of a normal human being for a marathon? Like, 17 hours?
I'm trying to think of this in me terms. So
Hang on. If you run an 8-minute mile, if a overly athletic person that is going to be, like, prepared to run the Boston Marathon at their slowest runs an 8-minute mile.
Because I ran. Granted, this was high school, but I ran a 10K, which is 6.2
mm-hmm.
miles. I ran 6.2 miles in like 58 minutes. So we'll just round it up to an hour. So 6 times 4 is 24, right? Yeah,
this has us at like 3 hours and 29.6 minutes. Because 180 is 3 hours.
Yeah.
This is at 209.6. So that put us at like
3 hours and 20 minutes.
3 hours and 20 minutes.
Based on my 10K time, I would be doing that in like probably 4 hours, and so 4 hours and change. But also, it's a marathon. I would be closer to 5 or 6 hours.
I think I would. I think I'd make it a mile. Go, that was fun. Let's never do it again. And
see, I low key. If
go
I,
to the nearest Irish pub within the Boston race course.
Low key, if now this is gonna sound so stupid that I've thought this through. If I marry rich and never have to work a day in my life, I kind of want to train for a half marathon. I think I could do 13 miles.
If I marry rich and never have to work a day in my life. Hey, we're going to talk about a way that you can do that. Because we're going to talk about my theory of why I think golfers are the, when we talk about the Masters, we'll talk about my theory of why I think golfers are the best professional athletes.
Oh, my word. Okay. So, but back to Catherine Switzer. So she won the New York City Marathon in 1974, ran the Boston Marathon in 2 hours and 51 minutes in 75. Now, this is interesting. She later became friends with Jock Semple, the co-race director who tried to throw her out.
Oh, my God.
Because in 1972, when they allowed women in the marathon, I think once they allowed that, he kind of realized how wrong. She said he never apologized, but he like came up to her at the start of the 1972 Boston Marathon, put an arm around her, gave her a kiss, and said, like, welcome. Or it was something to the effect of, like, all right, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
So she said that after that, they became friends, and they stayed friends until his death in 1988.
Aww.
And she said that everybody was kind of like, how are you friends with somebody who did that to you, or somebody who thought so prejudicedly until, you know, they had to stop thinking like that. And she was like, well, he demonstrated that he respected me. And she said he never really apologized, but I think his way of apologizing was to allow me to run and to stay in contact and, you know, overall be supportive. So that was kind of all she had to say about staying friends with him. But she said she did visit him, like, towards the end of his life. And they talked about it and all that kind of stuff. But the picture of the two of them at the start line of the 1972 marathon was, like, put up in Times Square. And I think they said that the headline with it was the end of an era. So it was the end of an era of women not being allowed to run, which is awesome. And this is super fun about Switzer. So she went on to become, like, a very well-known broadcaster. Mm-hmm. So
women in, I recognized her name, but women I couldn't in media, remember from where.
Women in media, hey. She then ran the Boston Marathon again in 2017 at the age of 70, which is 50 years after her first one. Aww. She ran it in 4 hours and 44 minutes, which is only 24 minutes slower than her first Boston Marathon that she ran 50 years prior. And in 2017... she ran 26.2 miles wearing bib number 261.
Oh, cool.
And that race is what launched the 261 Fearless Foundation.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of that.
Which she started to empower women who, like, female runners.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, because one thing that I saw was that in Middle Eastern countries, like, I think it said Pakistan, Iraq, or, like, those, that kind of area, where
mm-hmm.
you know, women's rights aren't where they are here, or like here, Europe, or like those kinds of areas. So, but they said that women will be out at 4 a.m. Like, there are running clubs there where women will be out at 4 a.m. in their what are they called? It's not Birkins, but it's something. Oh my gosh. It starts with a B, and it's burka? Is it a
burka? Burka? Yeah, it's a burka.
Yeah, sorry. Birkin is a bag. Burka. Yes. Yeah. But she said there'll be women out at 4 a.m. in burkas running because they want to run. And I think they said it's called, there's a group called the Midnight Runners.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in Afghanistan. And there's women and a few men who run with them in case they need, like, you know, mm-hmm. like safety, protection, that kind of thing. Or if they find themselves in a bad situation. And they'll get up at 4 a.m. and run because they just want to run.
Aww.
So it,
I like that.
It kind of supports movements like that to encourage and empower female runners to do whatever they want to do.
I like that.
I know. But yeah, so those are the first two women to officially and unofficially run the Boston Marathon, which is taking place today. So yay. Next up, a very short little thing on women's hockey.
Very nice.
Because the IIHF Women's World Hockey Championships happened recently, and the USA lost to Canada. Of course. Because if there's one thing about Canada, you're not beating them in hockey, dude. Like, they've all but monopolized hockey. Canada, mm-hmm. well, I guess Canada and Russia have all but monopolized it. But the USA is right up there with them, though. I think they said it was a 6-5 loss, so it was close. But I mention this because I want to put out my prediction. I think women's hockey is the next sport to get the WNBA treatment.
I hope it is.
Because with the PWHL starting up,
mm-hmm.
and they've broken records in Canada and the U.S. for women's hockey viewership.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, like, broadcasting. I forget if they have had one with ESPN Plus, but they had, like, you know, they had their games on YouTube, things like that. I think women's hockey is the next women's sport to blow up and really get people to rally mm-hmm. around it. And if that happens, I'm going to be so excited, dude. Like, I love being in an era where women's sports are being kind of rallied around and lifted up in the way they should mm-hmm. and getting the respect they deserve. So, that being said, my next point just says the Masters question mark, and then the bullet point under that says yap away, Sydney. So
don't have to tell me twice. So I was not very well versed in sports before we started this podcast, and I still wouldn't say I'm even like incredibly well versed in sports. One thing I know so freaking much about, whether I want to or not, is golf. Golfed for 2 years myself. I have spent my entire childhood waiting and counting down the days for the weekend that the PGA Tour comes to Firestone Country Club in Akron, Ohio, to spend a weekend with my family watching golf and hanging with some pretty unique friends of the family. That my family's gathered over the years. But Scottie Scheffler, at 27 years old, a soon-to-be DILF.
Oh, my gosh.
Soon-to-be DILF, Scottie Scheffler,
DILF.
Won his second Masters. And essentially how this has gone is he won 2 years ago in 2022. John Rahm won in 2023, and Scottie Scheffler has won in 2024. As of right now, it is being pretty disputed because of the way he is going through majors. Scottie Scheffler may just be the best golfer in the world right now.
Really?
He's really good. Winning tons of things. The one thing that people were kind of shocked about, and it kind of shocked me too that he was as low as he was, is Rory McIlroy. If he would have won the Masters, he would have won the Grand Slam in golf, which I believe off the top of my head, and I can look up what it is the, you win the PGA Tour. Hang on.
See, I know nothing about golf. Like, I know what the Masters is. I know it's in Augusta, right?
It is at Augusta National, one of the most gorgeous golf courses in the world. So you have to
literally
win.
Literally beautiful.
So a Grand Slam is winning all of the major tournaments, and they are...
It's kind of
yes,
like a Grand Slam.
You are winning all of the major tournaments within, yeah, it's within your career. The Tiger Slam, which is Tiger Woods is the only person to complete this, is winning all four of those major titles in a calendar year.
That's crazy.
So it is the Masters, the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, and the Open Championship in your life. So Rory McIlroy
has won all but the Masters.
Has won all but the Masters. He's won the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, and the Open Championship.
Tiger Woods did all of those in
Tiger
one calendar
did
year.
All of those in one calendar year.
That's crazy.
And I'm pretty sure he was like in his 20s. But that's the other thing. Scottie Scheffler won his first Masters at 25 and his second at 27. We were talking to Tanner and Drew this morning. They said that both Jordan Spieth has won his too, and he was younger. I think he was 23 and 25. Friggin' crazy.
Yeah.
Like, freaking crazy. My morbid fascination, though, that I've been looking into, you know how, like, people get obsessed with, like, criminals and, like, their last meals? I found TikToks of all of the Masters menus because they do, like, a champions dinner. So it's a menu prepared with the chefs at Augusta National with the current champion. So, like, Bubba Watson did, like, South Carolina, like, home-style barbecue.
Oh!
The last guy that won it from Spain had, like, his mom's Tres Leches cake, gave them the recipe, and they created it.
That's so
And it was, like, it's a very personalized dinner to them. Like, they pick the wine list.
So, like, the 2023 Masters winner got to pick the menu
so
for
So John
this year.
Ram made the menu for this coming year. Okay. Scottie Scheffler made 2 years ago. He'll make again next year.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, people can do different things. I think, like, Tiger Woods was, like... they did like steak and fish, family style sides of like mashed potatoes, mac and cheese, asparagus, green beans, like all those kinds of things, and then like a dessert. So my question for you, Kaylee, is off of the top of your head: appetizer, entree, dessert, and a drink. What is your Master's meal? I have mine because I think it's also going to be the same as my death row meal.
Okay. Am I allowed to say Dr. Pepper for my drink?
Why not?
if this was like representative of me, like that's what we're going, it'd be Dr. Pepper and iced coffee. That would be the drink menu and water, of course, because hydrate or dihydrate.
Yeah.
Appetizer. Ooh. See, I feel like my food would be mostly Italian food. Appetizer would be my great grandma's dinner rolls. Even though they're impossible to replicate because we have tried. She made the best rolls in the world. She left us her recipe when she passed. We have not been able to replicate it perfectly.
Oh, wow.
So maybe the chefs at Augusta could figure out how to
maybe
do it.
Maybe they could figure out.
Because they're a little more
grandma's dinner
than
rolls.
We are. But no, nobody has been able to replicate Katie Riccatelli's dinner rolls. Those would be in the appetizers. Probably the Riccatelli gnocchi recipe. Mm-hmm. That would be an appetizer, I think. A gnocchi's an appetizer.
Yeah.
Entree? I feel like my grandma's lasagna. My grandma isn't even technically the Italian. It's my dad's side.
Yes.
But she wasn't on the Italian side. But she still makes a fire lasagna, dude. But the lasagna would have my mom's homemade spaghetti sauce that she makes with tomatoes and all that from our garden.
Oh, okay.
Juices them herself, makes it, cans it.
We love a sauce. We love a Sunday sauce. We love a Sunday sauce.
It's so good. And I can't buy store-bought spaghetti sauce anymore because I have to use my mom's because it just doesn't taste the same. Lasagna, what else? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my. So if it was me, it would be... Was it the vodka pasta that Gigi Hadid?
Gigi Hadid's vodka post.
But minus the vodka.
Minus vodka. Virgin vodka post.
Because I make that all the time. It has become my signature. And
in your apartment.
Yes. Not just my
Amongst
apartment.
The
like
roommates.
Just among my friends. Like if anybody wants Gigi pasta, we call it Gigi pasta because it was her recipe. That's where we got it from. And they're like, Kaylee, make Gigi pasta, and I'm like, yeah, of course. So that would be on there. It would be a lot of pasta because there's that in the lasagna. I feel like I'd have to throw chicken in there.
Okay.
There's this lemon chicken that I've made before that's really good. I might throw that in there for anybody who doesn't want pasta.
What's your dessert?
My dessert? Cookie dough.
Just like edible
cookie dough.
Cookie dough.
Edible cookie dough.
Heck yeah.
Well, specifically edible. We don't want salmonella. But
Toll House has now made their cookie dough edible.
Yeah. Okay, then Toll House edible cookie dough. Because, no, actually, no, it wouldn't be that cookie dough. It would be the cookie dough you get in the little plastic cups it sheets. Have you ever
yes.
had that stuff? No, literally.
Sheets cookie dough.
That's
your master's dessert.
I fiend for Sheets cookie dough, okay? Mm-hmm. So, like, there was a time a couple weeks ago I went with my roommates because I was, like, I forget if I was sad or just, like, hormonal. And I was like, guys, I need Sheets cookie dough. So my roommates went with me. I get there, I look at the center thing where they always have the cookie dough. There's no cookie dough.
Oh my God.
I went, there's no cookie dough? And like, it was quiet. Like, it wasn't like I said it in front of the entire store. I went, there's no cookie dough. And I like scared my roommates. They're like, what? And I was like, they don't have any freaking cookie dough, guys.
No freaking cookie dough, guys.
And I was like, there has to be some here somewhere. Like, I needed the cookie dough. And I found a bag of Ben and Jerry's edible cookie dough.
Oh, very
so.
Nice.
But it would be either cookie dough ice cream.
Or cookie dough, actually.
Maybe cookie dough cheesecake, or just straight up scoops of cookie dough.
Okay.
That would be my master's meal.
So, mine requires some context. So, I'm also going to check my privilege points here, but I am going to bring this up.
Actually, I'm also going to add, for an entree, my dad's shrimp Alfredo.
Okay, perfect. So, my dad is a member. I'm not going to say the name of the golf course, but it is a sister course to Augusta. It's in South Carolina. So, it's on the South Carolina side of Augusta. And they, like, customer service to the nines cannot explain it. The nicest, sweetest, like, most beautiful, southern, hospitable people in the world. And one of the most outrageously beautiful and delicious dinner menus in the world. So, my master's meal is... Appetizer options are calamari with lemon and marinara sauce. Squeezed lemon and marinara sauce. Or the fried pickles from this said golf course. And I don't like fried pickles, but there's something these fried pickles... Every time my dad is there and he calls me, I'm like, eat a vat of fried pickles for me. And remember that I love you every day. Literally, that's me. I'm like, just eat them and remember that I don't have them and I would like them immediately. Ship them to me, please. And I'll hope they're still hot. Or I'll heat them up. So, calamari, those fried pickles specifically. A table 9 in Morgantown, West Virginia, Caesar salad. Chicken Caesar salad from table 9 is the best Caesar salad in the entire world. It cures hangovers, and I think it would probably cure diseases.
I have never been to table 9.
It is the most delicious thing in the entire world. I recommend nothing else on their menu but that friggin' Caesar salad. It's friggin' delicious. Caesar salad. That chicken Caesar salad specifically, I would do my bonus grandpa, Bob. I would do his, Christmas and Thanksgiving prime rib. So he makes a delicious prime rib. I would do his prime rib. I would do my grandma's homemade mashed potato recipe. I would do, asparagus, because I like asparagus better than green beans, and my cousin Jocelyn's cheesy potatoes. Those are my sides. It's cheesy potatoes, mashed potatoes, like a plain mashed potato, cheesy potatoes because you got to get some cheese in there, asparagus, and the prime rib. And then my dessert is my Aunt Mel's cheesecake with cherries, not strawberries. The strawberries are a little too sweet. I prefer the cherries over top. I can eat an entire one of these cheesecakes by myself. I'm not joking. Like, she makes them. I can eat one of these entire cheesecakes by myself. Like, they're so delicious. It's so light, fluffy, and good. Like, I cannot explain it, people. It's so good.
I almost put cheesecake as my dessert because my mom makes a bomb cheesecake, cappuccino cheesecake specifically.
And then four to drink. For my sober party people, I think I'm going to go... It sounds horrible. This goes to show you that I'm not a person who drinks non-alcoholic beverages with nice dinners. I would say water with lemon.
real.
For our sober folks. That's maybe a little half and half, a little lemonade.
I mean, if you're at a golf course, you have to offer an Arnold Palmer.
A little Arnold Palmer, a little lemonade iced tea action, unsweet iced tea with lemonade. Not sweet tea with lemonade, unsweet iced tea with lemonade, please.
You should not just say unsweet tea.
Yes, I'm from the North. Oh. We drink unsweet iced tea. I'm sorry.
That's
foul. I apologize for the crimes that I've committed against humanity. It's a very specific kind of white wine, but it's my favorite one that my dad gives me because my dad collects wine. It's called Entrada. It's an Entrada white wine. It's either a Pinot Grigio or a Sauvignon Blanc. I can't remember which one it is. Okay. But nice white wine, or a nice rosé, or the signature drink of the evening, a Tito's vodka Moscow Mule.
Real.
In a copper mug. In a freezing cold copper mug.
Slay. I thought of another.
That's my master's meal. The other thing I want to bring up, you
I
can.
I thought of another entree. Yes. So there's this.
You're going to have 17 entree options.
Well, because
I have prime. You're getting steak.
Well, because
you're getting steak.
A lot of mine are pasta. So I'm thinking as a non-pasta alternative, or a better one, because I thought of a better one, is my family does this thing called the Beaufort broil. Mm-hmm. Or Beaufort boil. I forget if it's boil mm-hmm. or broil, because my family is like redneck country, all mm-hmm. and I can't tell what they're saying half the time. But it's, I think my aunt and uncle, who had spent some time around like Beaufort, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is it like a low country boil?
So it's like potatoes. I think it's potatoes, corn, mm-hmm. kielbasa, I think is in there.
Yep.
There's shrimp
in there.
It's a
low country boil.
Yeah.
They'll call it different things.
They call it the Beaufort boil.
Yes, it's a low country boil. We do one every year with my bonus grandpa and his family.
Yeah.
We do.
That would be in there.
Yeah, we do that with his family and my grandma down in Georgia. We go down and we do a low country boil. And we sit in the garage and we eat. And I think someone actually did do a low country boil as their master's meal. I do remember seeing
it on
there. I don't remember who did it, but someone did it.
I would do it because we do that for my granddad's birthday every year because that's all he asks for. And his birthday is like in mm-hmm. the summer. So it's nice outside. We just sit out there.
You can do your
low
country boil for your master's meal. So another thing I want to bring up about this before we move on. I'm pulling my microphone out of its stand. I'm going to say this with my chest. There are a lot of different requirements to be in the Masters.
Oh, really?
So I'm going to go over the list.
Okay.
Masters Tournament of Champions, you get lifetime entry. U.S. Open Champion, you are honorary, non-competing after 5 years. So essentially you can play in the tournament. Your score just won't count and you can't win after 5 years. But you can play as long as you want to. Same thing with the Open Champion and the PGA Champion. You can win the Players Championship and you're in it for 3 years. Current Olympic gold medalist, you get 1 year to play. Current U.S. amateur champion and amateur runner-up, those are the two people that compete. I would like to say, there was the amateur that played with Tiger on the last day of the Masters beat him. He finished.
Is that like the Ohio State grad student, or is this a different guy?
No, that's the Texas Tech kid. He's from Sweden, and he is.
I thought it was Ohio State.
Gorgeous, please marry me. It might be. I don't know. I thought it was a Texas Tech kid, but he was on the Ryder Cup. And I think he was actually a pro, not an amateur. He is gorgeous. My friend Kellen is interested. Ludwig, please call her.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, yes. The current amateur champion is the honorary non-competing after 1 year. Current Asia-Pacific amateur champion, Latin America amateur champion, U.S. mid-amateur champion. So there might be other amateur champions. Current NCAA D1 men's individual champion. That might be the kid from Ohio State.
Okay. What's his name?
No idea. I just am reading the list of things.
Okay.
The first 12 players, including ties in the previous year's Masters tournament. The first 4 players, including ties in the U.S. Open, Open Championship, PGA tournament. Individual winners of PGA Tour events that award full point allocation for the season-ending tour championship from previous Masters to current Masters. Those qualifying on the previous year's season-ending tour championship. The 50 leaders of the final official world golfing ranking from the previous calendar, and the 50 leaders on the official world golf ranking published during the week prior to the Masters tournament. So a ton of people play in this.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you what the main rule of this is?
What?
You must be a man.
Are you kidding
me? Augusta has said very openly that women will never be allowed to play in the Masters. It is a part of the... they're protective of the tournament, is essentially how they say. A women's masters is currently not on Augusta's agenda. However, they run the National Women's Amateur, which is a 54-hole stroke play event. They debuted it in 2019. So amateur women can play.
There's a women's PGA, isn't
there? Yes, there's a WPGA.
Why can't they have their masters at Augusta?
They don't have a masters.
They don't have a why can't they have a masters at Augusta for the WPGA that very much exists and is well established?
They don't believe in it.
They don't believe...
I don't want to say they don't believe in it, but they... So there are at least 7 female members at Augusta National Golf Club. But that is it.
But there...
I can tell you right now, I think there is a female member at the sister courts my dad belongs to in South Carolina. They are all men.
Wow. Are you kidding me?
I'm telling you right now, people don't talk about it often enough. Like, tons of women play golf. It's a very misogynistically rooted sport.
Well, yeah, it's like a quote-unquote gentleman's sport.
It's a gentleman's sport, but the one thing they want you to do when you're a business professional is be the woman who can golf. That's why I golfed.
But you're not going to let me compete in the match. You expect yep. you if I want to be like a business professional, whatever, you expect me to golf, but you're not going to let women golf professionally. Mm-hmm.
So the reason they have it is because they host a women's tournament. Yeah. So here, is there a women's equivalent to the Masters?
I mean, I think there's like, is there WPGA championships? Like at all?
So for 30 years, they no longer do it, but for 30 years, there was a women's professional tournament that was seen as the companion to the Masters, but they did not use the Masters branding. It was called the Women's Title Holders Golf Tournament. It was held for 30 years. Let me look at when they said it. Yes. So the first Title Holders Tournament was held in 1937, and the LPGA, that's called the Ladies.
LPGA, not yet. The Ladies. My bad.
The LPGA wasn't started until 1950. So, yeah.
That's earlier than a lot of women's sports,
yep,
though.
Golf's been around for forever, though.
Yeah.
But, so, this is my campaign. Congrats, Scottie Scheffler, but I want to bring back the title holders. But I also do want to shout him out. So he was very, very sweet, and a lot of people, I saw this video this morning, it was very, very sweet. He didn't want to make the walk without the caddy and his family. Aww. So, like, they were all going to leave him behind and walk up to him later after he turned his card in, and he wanted to make the walk to the clubhouse with them. So he let his caddy lead the way, and he walked with his mom. And then two of his sisters, his dad and his grandpa, were there because his wife is similar to Kylie Kelce. She's 9 months pregnant.
Wait.
She is like weeks away from giving birth, and she was sitting at home on her couch.
What?
No, Kylie Kelce was pregnant at the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Like it
was
gonna
say, what?
No. Kylie Kelce was very, very pregnant at the Super Bowl, brought like 2 OBs with her. They wanted her to give birth in the stadium.
That would be hilarious.
But no. She was at home watching from the couch, and literally he said the entire time he was doing his interview, he was like, this is very fun and all. I'm very, very grateful for the tournament, but I need to get on a flight to Dallas like yesterday because I want to go home to my wife.
Shut up. Get you a man who will, yes, one, leave the Masters to get home, and two, a man who will shoulder check a race, yes, director to get him off of you.
Next, so I propose my next thing.
Oh no.
I want to be a golf wag. I'm opening my application to any and all interested contenders. Please send your attributes to redacted. I just like golf, and I think it's fun, and like you get to wear cute outfits and, like, prance around a course and... Drink the whole time.
If I ever found my way onto a golf course, I would be like Sharpay Evans in High School Musical.
Oh, too. Yeah. Oh, I used to. Did I ever tell you when I was a child, I used to dress up in the High School Musical outfits? I used to make my mom buy me clothes that would be like the outfits because I was convinced I was a High School Musical character.
I was bopped to the top Sharpay for Halloween when I was like 7.
Oh, I was Gabrielle. No, I'm talking like my mom would buy me clothes from like Gymboree that looked like Gabriella's clothes. I had a Sharpay High School Musical 2 golf dress set with coordinating pink child's golf clubs. Like, my mom fed into this crazy fascination I had that I was convinced I was just... Because Gabriella was the child... Like, she was the hero for the brunetted children. Because Hannah Montana was a blonde... And she was cool and fancy.
Sharpay was the hero for the girls who wished they were blonde.
Yes, exactly. That's why I wanted to both be Gabriella and Sharpay at all times. Anyway, I digress. I want to be a golf wife. I would like to still work to have my life and my own things, but I would at one point like to marry a golfer and become a golf wag.
Slay.
And I just like golf. Like, take me golfing, please. It's fun.
Don't take me golfing. I'm going to kill someone, actually.
So I... Do you want me to tell me the story how I almost killed someone?
What?
I was a little kid effing around with my dad's set of golf clubs, like my little kid golf clubs, and my dad was like showing us how to hit, and I had literally just pushed my brother off a couch and broke his arm. And then he walked in front of me, and I hit him in the back of the head with a golf ball. He's fine. He lived.
See,
he's 18, almost 19. He's going to college, and he turned out fine.
See, do I know how to golf? No.
Would you absolutely do what I did, but as an adult?
Do I want to go to Top Golf? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That looks like fun.
I did that the for only, like all of my high school birthdays.
The only time I have swung at a golf ball, I broke the tee.
That's common, though.
I know, but like I also didn't hit it very well.
That means you got some power behind that thing.
I hit the ground first and then hit the ball. The ball went nowhere and I broke the tee. And it was my dad's like tees and clubs, and he went, "Yeah, we're gonna put these away."
You know, I'm a good long driver. I can like mollywop that thing like 200 yards. Like,
I couldn't get it
par fours, I'm landing at the edge of the green every time if I get a good hit on a drive. My dad tells me that my short game and the way that I putt a golf ball makes him want to take like crazy visceral amounts of migraine medication because it frightens him deeply. But no, I literally am like thinking about it now, and I'm like, I literally have the 9-hole golf course my high school played on like memorized. Like, I remember what holes were what.
Oh, wow.
Because my dad, we were practicing the night before my JV golf tryouts, and my dad got a hole in one on one of the holes that we played our high school golf tournaments on. And I was with him. We were literally, it was just me and him in this entire course. We were the only two people out there. It was like 7 o'clock at night. We literally just went out to play the quick 9 holes so that I would know what to expect, like how the greens were, because I didn't think they'd change the greens overnight. So I went out to play the greens before so I would know like how it was going to play, how it was going to be able to hit. And we were looking for his ball, and it was like, it was a par four down a hill. And you couldn't see the green, and you'd go down the hill, and then you'd see where your ball landed, if you landed in the fairways, if you went over. And my dad just assumed he whacked it and hit it over. And we went to look for his ball, and I went to putt, and my ball wouldn't go in the hole all the way. And we looked in, and his ball was sitting in the hole.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's my fun memory with my dad.
Go, bud.
Slay bud. We love you, bud.
Slay bud.
Ready? In the wise words of the @professionalzip on Twitter, with the squirrel mean.
All hail, bud. You just ripped your headphones off.
I'm working with a different microphone today, and it's like bad news bears over here, people.
Also,
all hail, bud Wentz.
The Boston Globe has the Boston Marathon results from this year. So,
oh, slay.
In first place is Cisse Lema.
Okay.
33-year-old from Ethiopia. Led nearly wire to wire to win the men's elite race. He prevented Evans Chebet, from becoming the first man to win 3 consecutive marathons in a row since 2008. So this guy almost became the first to win three consecutive marathons in a row since 2008, and then he got held off by Lema, who is a 33-year-old from Ethiopia. And then Helen Obiri won her second straight Boston Marathon. She's the sixth woman to win back-to-back titles and the first since Catherine Nereba in 2005.
So slay.
Sixth to win back-to-back, the first one to do it since 2005. Switzerland Marcel Hug broke the course record en route to a seventh men's wheelchair title in Boston. His time of 1 hour, 15 minutes, 33 seconds beat the record he set last year. And then Great Britain's Eden Rainbow Cooper, Rainbow Cooper is her last name and it's hyphenated, which slays, won the women's wheelchair title with a time of 1 hour, 35 minutes, 11 seconds. The 22-year-old is the first British woman to win Boston in either the open or wheelchair divisions. So the British finally won something in Boston.
My pronouns are USA.
My pronouns are USA. Special teams, special players.
What's up, brother?
Tuesday. Okay, I need to
We're
stop.
Not doing that on this podcast.
We're not doing
That's
that.
Worse than us singing.
That's worse than me saying slay all the time. But let me tell you, Will Levis has that down to an art. Like, mm-hmm. It scares me. Anyway, so that was the Masters, that was golf, that was the Boston Marathon.
Yes.
Of course, we have to talk about the MLB this week. Okay. Because, one, today's Jackie Robinson Day.
Happy 42 Day.
So, as you know, 40, which actually, yeah, 42 is retired for Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had to think of who they retired it for. So, 42 is retired, is the only universally retired number in the MLB, mm-hmm. and they retired it for Jackie Robinson.
Yes.
Which I forget when they retired it, but it was more recently because Mariano Rivera still wore 42 in mm-hmm. like the early 2000s. And he was like one of the last people to wear it. So 42 is retired by every team in the MLB to honor Jackie Robinson, who broke the color barrier in the MLB on April 15th, 1947. So today is the day, today is the anniversary of the day that Jackie Robinson started for the Brooklyn Dodgers at first base.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the first black player to play in the MLB. Because before that they had a specific league that had been around since the 1880s, but there was still that barrier. And so he was the first one to actually break into the major leagues. And, of course, he was famously played by Chadwick Boseman in 42, which mm-hmm. is a phenomenal movie. And like, cause of course, all the baseball accounts today are tweeting that picture where, like it's from the movie. It's a scene from the movie, but, where they say maybe we'll all wear 42 so they can't tell us apart, which mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure is something they actually did. So today, every Major League Baseball player will be wearing number 42.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's really cool. And I don't know how to transition to this lighter note, but another big thing happened in the MLB this weekend, and that is the fabled poop series.
Not the poop series.
Because we unlocked something with this year. We unlocked something. So the poop series is when the Pirates and Phillies play each other. And the scoreboard starts out with the team logos on either side and zeros in the middle. Which, of course, being the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Philadelphia Phillies spells out poop. Right? But this year, they were tied 3-3 at one point. So we have unlocked the peep game.
The peep game?
Peep, because they were tied 3-3. Oh. So he said, you've heard of the poop series.
Now it's the peep.
Now we've got a peep game.
Peep game.
And it was fantastic. So, you know, happy Jackie Robinson Day to everyone, because everyone should be celebrating Jackie Robinson Day, because it is a milestone for not just baseball, but all professional sports. Of breaking a barrier that hung around for way too long. And then also happy poop series to all who celebrate.
All
because
who celebrate.
Which actually, I can't remember who. They split the series because it was a 4-game series.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh 1-2, Philadelphia 1-2. So everybody.
Everybody gets a poop.
Everybody gets to celebrate.
Everybody gets a poop. Everybody gets a peep. And it's, we're happy about it.
Exactly.
Baseball.
I love baseball. Okay. So now we're going to get into our Mountaineer sports, which we're not going to start off with baseball because the boys get pushed to the end because this is the girls who get it.
We're going to start with the...
We're going to start with basketball again.
Oh, more basketball.
So the WVU women's basketball team, of course, got eliminated by the Hawkeyes, which there was actually a woman I follow on TikTok who talks about sports. I don't remember what her handle is, but she even said, and this validated me, I think, because she was talking about Iowa, and she said they should have been eliminated in the WVU game. And I said, thank you, Queen. Because I thought I was crazy, and I was like, oh, only West Virginians are thinking this. I'm like, oh my gosh, literally nobody is with West Virginia here, because they were talking about it on Twitter, but I was like they're not convincing anybody. But this woman who is all for women's sports, all for basketball, she said Iowa should have been eliminated against WVU, and I will never forget that. I'll never forget that game, at least. And I love that TikToker, so I just felt so validated that somebody that I enjoy watching was like, yeah, they should have been eliminated that round. But that being said, our WVU women's basketball team in the way too early poll, like way too early preseason poll, was ranked 16 in the country. So we're going into this season ranked 16th as of now. Now, of course, once practices start and, you know, we have our final roster, they'll judge it a little bit differently from there. But from there, sorry, I don't know why I said it like that. But, yeah, so go basketball baddies, starting out within the top 20. Holy cow. That's going to be really fun. I'm excited for that year. And, oh, my gosh, I'm not going to be here for it.
Yes, I know. We're going to be, like, really good at sports, and now we're leaving. But I guess that's how those things work.
Up. I'm so mad. But also, our women, our Mountaineers out in Ames.
Our Cycloneers. They're kicking booty.
Had a heck of a weekend this weekend. They won their series against number 5 Oklahoma State. So they played a 3-game series against Oklahoma State this weekend. April 12th through 14th, Friday through Sunday. Friday, they won 2-0, shutout.
Oh, really nice.
Shutout game against number 5. The next day, followed that up with a 5-2 victory over number 5 Oklahoma State. And then on Sunday, they unfortunately lost 2-10.
Oh, wow. Well, they still took the series.
Exactly. Oklahoma State had to be coming with, like, a vengeance.
Yeah, they took the series. Nonetheless.
But
no,
they
good
won
for
the
them.
Series, dude. So...
They beat the ladies from the Stillwater Strip.
This is Ames.
But they beat the ladies from the Stillwater
Strip. Oklahoma State is in Stillwater. They played in Ames. I was like, wait a minute. I was like, what? Which?
Oh, you go, this was in Ames. That should be the redacted lyric to Zach Bryan's song.
Yeah.
Way out in Norman, the Stillwater Strip. This was in Ames.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
this
yeah,
was
yeah.
A name.
I was trying to think. I was like, where's Oklahoma? Because I was like, which one is in Stillwater?
And
I,
Norman I was, is.
Oklahoma's Norman.
No, Oklahoma's Norman.
Way out in Norman, the Oklahoma Stillwater Strip.
Is where Oklahoma State yeah. is.
So our Cycloneers coming up have, oh my gosh. Okay, Iowa State, you need to fix your gosh dang website. Because every time I go anywhere close to the top of the page, it brings up a page full of like stuff I don't want to see, and it takes forever to pop off. So sorry. Little constructive criticism, make your website better. Anyway, so then of course, like we were talking about last week, tomorrow they have their own rivalry game. The Cycloneers have their own rivalry game against Iowa, which is the Iowa Corn Cyhawk series.
I've been so excited for this.
Which is this one is in Ames. And they play April 16th at 4 p.m. Central Time. So 3 p.m. us, our time.
No. Well, wait. Hang on. 4 p.m. Central Time? It's 5 p.m.
our time. 5 p.m. our time. It's 1 hour.
You're getting better. It's okay.
I knew it was a different time. I knew it was
a
different time.
We're getting better. It's okay.
I was thinking backwards. Okay. And then this weekend, the 18th through the 20th, they play BYU out in Provo, Utah. It's 6 p.m. on Thursday. No, yeah, 6 p.m. on Thursday, 6 p.m. Friday, and then 1 p.m. on Saturday. And those are, it looks like those are all streaming on ESPN Plus and Big 12 Now. And then they play Utah Valley out in Orem, Utah on April 21st at 12 p.m. Central Time. These are all Central Time. So this is actually, they'll play BYU our time, 7 p.m. Thursday, 7 p.m. Friday, 1 p.m. Saturday. No, not 1 p.m., 2 p.m. Saturday. They play at 1 p.m. on their time. And then they'll play at 1 p.m. Sunday, 5 p.m. Tuesday against St. Thomas. And then Friday, April 26th, they'll play Texas at 7 p.m. And that's on the Longhorn Sports Network, which is the biggest joke I've ever seen. But anyway, because you have to have, like, it's not like on ESPN. Like, it's just Longhorn Network. And it's, you have, Texas is so infuriating. Literally, I was trying to explain the horns down thing to someone the other day. I was like, yeah, it's the only, like, taunt that you get penalized for in the Big 12 because they get baited.
You can give the middle finger, but you can't do horns down.
Well, because don't they do something for Texas Tech? Because Texas Tech does the pistols, and other teams will, like, holster the pistols.
Yeah, Texas Tech is the pistol. So there's a picture. It was really cute. It's a girl I, like a distant family friend. She's going to Oklahoma. And a bunch of her friends are all going to Big 12 schools.
Or is Oklahoma State the pistols? Or does Oklahoma
State and Texas Tech both do the pistols.
Uh-huh.
And I believe it's Texas, Oklahoma, and TCU holster the pistols.
Yeah.
But TCU also does the weird little
the weird little thing
that isn't horns but is the frog. I don't know what a horned frog is.
It's
with your two fingers. Yeah.
It's okay. Your middle and pointer.
Yeah.
And you just, like, put your knuckles up, and then I usually do that upside down because it's still horns down.
Yes.
But
horned upside down horned frogs.
Because I was trying to tell one of my friends the other day, that, like, horns down is the only taunt that you get penalized for because Texas whined about it. And I was like, you guys aren't special.
My favorite thing ever, Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes are still throwing the horns down in professional sports to this day.
Because horns down.
They're proud Big 12-sters. And they even know that Texas sucks.
Literally, I can't. Texas is leaving for the SEC. I'm not even going to miss
them.
So is
Oklahoma. And we're not gonna, so long, Texas. We won't miss you.
Yeah, no. Get so far away, please. Anyway, so shout out Cycloneers. They're slaying. That's April 26th. That's like the next weekend. But they play Texas at 7 p.m., 2 p.m., and 1 p.m. Eastern time. That weekend, which I think is the weekend that baseball plays Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, speaking of baseball, what a weekend for the Mountaineers.
Hang on. I got to get something really quick. I got to get my broom.
Yeah.
Because we're sweeping, baby.
We're sweeping. We swept University of Central Florida.
All the way back to Mickey.
Screw you, Mickey.
Whoa.
Sorry. But we swept the University of Central Florida in Morgantown this week. We almost didn't,
This was the most stressful weekend of my life.
One of the most stressful
baseball
games.
This was my weekend for the migraine medication.
That I have attended. So I was at the baseball game Sunday. One, I went straight from church. So I had a sweater on. I probably should have changed. But also it was a gold rush and I didn't have a yellow shirt to wear. So I was like, oh, my sweater's yellow. It'll be fine. It was not as breezy as I thought it was, but also my sweater was, like, really airy. Like, it had enough holes in it to where I was getting enough of a draft. So I wasn't that hot.
For everyone who was concerned about Haley wearing a wool, not Haley, about Kaylee. I always confuse all of our
And it wasn't
EY names.
It wasn't wool. It was cotton.
Yes, they were all like, they were all like, Kaylee, were you wearing a wool sweater?
I said it was cotton.
Baseball game, and she's like, it was cotton.
And I had a tank top on under
it.
But I'm also kind of glad that I had a long sleeve shirt on because the sunburn that I got, guys.
Only one side of Kaylee's body.
One side of me is burnt. Yeah. Let me. So Kendrick family, while you own the ballpark now, right? I have a request. Can you please reorient it to where the sun is even? Because my right side. So I was in shorts and a sweater. And I was comfortable. I put sunscreen on my face because I made that mistake last year. No, not last year. Year before last. Because that was when I turned 21. Yeah, yeah, because here's the story. I got burnt at a baseball game, bad, because I didn't put sunscreen on my face because I forgot. And it was right before I turned 21, so it was right before I went to get my license picture retaken. I got my face burnt, got burnt so bad my forehead swelled, and my nose was like blistery burnt. And I had to take my license picture with a burnt nose and a swollen forehead. I put so much makeup on. I did my bangs where they covered my forehead. I look half decent in that license picture. But I will never make that mistake again. So I put sunscreen on my face. I forgot to do the rest of me. I was like, well, I was like, it's sunny, but it's not like, it's not hot. And I was like, how long is it going to be direct sun? Because I was like, I know the sun's going to be moving. This game was at noon. Guys. My right thigh, just my thigh, and just on the right side, burnt to a crisp. And it's only the top of it. My left thigh, a little bit on the right side of that leg. Otherwise, it's fine. The other one, it's like copper tone baby, but if she was wearing shorts. Like, it's so bad. My right shoulder, because I was wearing long sleeves, my arm wasn't burnt. So it's just my right shoulder, like just the part that was exposed to the sun, burnt. So red. Like I'm taking redneck literally, dude. It's terrible. But anyway, that being said, I was at the game Sunday, and that was one of the most stressful baseball games I have ever been in attendance for. Sydney, you were there Saturday, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That one, we got that one pretty easily from, I'm remembering it.
Yeah,
right,
yeah. Well, the last two innings made me kind of brace myself,
yeah.
But it was a little bit of an easier, because
we were
bit of an easier getaway.
We were still up how many runs?
Two at the end.
Yeah. We won by two. We were up by more than that. So we had some leeway. This one. Literally, it went 11 innings. We won on a walk-off home run by Reed Chumley.
Reed Chumley.
Shout out Chum Bucket.
Oh, my God. Can I give
which
my
real? This is also, after he got, like, bonked in the nose by a pitch.
Yeah.
Was it the, I think it was the nose. I couldn't really tell.
Mm-hmm.
I just know he got hit in the face. His nose was red.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm assuming it did hit him in the nose. I thought he was bleeding for a second, but he wasn't. It was a shadow on the shirt. But got hit in the nose with a pitch, came back, literally his next at-bat, walked it off. Or with a home run.
I would like to shout out a couple of players for their being my realest players of the week.
Is this the realest players of the week? Yeah.
Spencer Barnett is my realest player of the week because his walk-up song is Something Bad by Miranda Lambert and Carrie Underwood. That was my favorite because I had never heard it before because I don't think he's played before. Or at least he hasn't played at a game that I've been at. That was the first time I heard that.
Hey, that's always been his walk-up.
I haven't heard it before.
Really?
But, well, I hadn't noticed it before.
Maybe he didn't start at the games
he's been
at.
Yes,
playing recently.
But he was my realist for that. My favorite of all time is Sam White's Careless Whisper.
Yeah.
Because everyone in the stadium sings it until he sets himself up to bat.
Yeah.
Like, after they play it, like, they'll play the, tonight the music seems so loud. I wish that we could lose this crowd. Baby, it's better this way. And then they fade it out there, and then everyone goes, we could have been so good together.
Because how do you not?
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. And then JJ's is Feathered
Hello,
Indians.
Hello, Feathered Indians walk
friggin'
up those hard.
Slays. But yeah, no, we have both the best players and the best walk-up songs in the Big 12.
No, literally, the walk-ups this year go so hard. Because first of all, we have JJ Weatherholt walking up to Feathered Indians, specifically starting at Looking Over West Virginia, which goes hard. I think, because I'm not going to lie, I kept singing that one. Sam White, because one of his is Careless Whisper.
The other is
Gimme, Gimme, Gimme by ABBA, which is amazing. We have Ben Lumsden, who walks up to Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy, and Smooth Operator,
yes,
which goes so hard. Oh my gosh. Skylar King. I was mixing up him and Sam White. Skylar King walks up to Hey Driver.
Yes, I heard that and I went, is this Hey Driver?
Yeah. Take me down a road that's a little bit winding.
I want to shout him out because I watched him like a freaking champ take a ball straight to the shin. Straight to the shin. And he walked like it was nothing.
Yeah.
Straight to the freaking shin. It made my legs quiver.
Yeah.
Like, it literally made me sit there and go,
like, ouch. But
like wince.
And then there's, oh my gosh, a guy who came in. He came in as like a pinch hitter, pinch runner later in the game. Walks up to Revival.
Yeah.
Which also goes so hard. And I know there's more.
Yes.
Save's walk-ups, both bops.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, dude, I think we've already talked about what our walk-up songs would be. But my friend and I have like a playlist of potential walk-up songs. But it's really fun. So we have amazing walk-ups this year. But, I have a realist player of the week that isn't even a Mountaineer, doesn't play baseball. But I follow him on Twitter. J.J. Watt is reading the Court of Thorns and Roses series.
Oh, my God. That's where we need to end the episode. J.J. Watt, you're our realist player of the year.
Like,
congratulations.
I feel like it was definitely his wife's idea. Like, he's tweeting updates. Like, he's like, guys, he's finished the first book.
I think
he's
he needs to go on McAfee and talk about it. He needs to give book reviews on the McAfee show.
I think Pat McAfee would have an aneurysm if anybody showed him the Court of Thorns and Roses. I haven't read it. I just know about it. I don't know if Pat McAfee could handle it, dude. Like, that might be the one
thing. I feel like
thing.
I, just by the look of the vibe of his wife, I feel like his wife would be, like, very much reading it. And he'd be like, why are you reading that? And she'd be like, give it a try. And he'd be like, I love it.
Yeah, it's, oh my gosh, it's fantastic. But WVU baseball had a weekend. But also, so walk-off home run, super cool, super slay. But it did not need to get to that point. There were a lot of plays that could have been made earlier that we would have avoided that situation entirely. So as fun as it was, but we did sweep. But I was like, I'm tired. I'm getting burnt. I need to go home. And I just needed them to get a run. But also, that is like the most excited I've been about somebody tying a game up, dude. Like, literally, I was there with my roommate. I turned to her and I went, we're tied up. And I like jumped up, dude. That was that last inning where we came up and tied it to send it to extra innings. That was phenomenal. And we did end up sweeping UCF. So Friday, we won 7-6. Saturday, we won 7-5. And then yesterday, we won 11-10.
In 11 innings.
Yeah.
Where are they going next? Oh, wait.
Next, we're staying in Morgantown.
We're staying in Morgantown.
Because
it's
going to
get stinky
speaking
here.
Speaking of Masters dinners.
It's going to get stinky here.
We're serving up our own dinner. We just talked about a poop series, right? Well,
it's going to get stinky in Morgantown.
The Mountaineers are having a poop series of their own because we're feeding Pitt. We're feeding Pitt what they eat, which is a four-letter word that starts with an S.
and ends with an HIT.
Yeah. Because the Mountaineers play Pitt tomorrow, April 16th at 6:30 in Wagner Field at Kendrick Family Ballpark at the Monongalia County Baseball Complex.
Fun run race for the cure.
Fun run race for the cure. I'm so excited, dude. I love backyard brawl games.
They go crazy.
It goes so crazy. This one's in Morgantown. 6:30 p.m. Be there or be square, which you literally better be there because this is going to be good.
It's our last backyard brawl game as students.
Actually.
Oh, wait. We play them one more time. Well,
we play them in Pittsburgh.
But will we play them again before we graduate? Is that at?
We play them again in Pittsburgh this year.
When?
April 30th.
Okay, so yeah, we're still in school.
Yeah. Which I hope so, because I got tickets. But yeah, so that's already going to happen by the time this comes out. But oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Because also, the Mountaineer baseball team entered the poll this week. We're at 22 now.
Slay.
Which, actually, UCF was number 17. I didn't even notice that.
Mm-hmm.
UCF was ranked. And we swept them.
And we're somehow still number one in the Big 12, but they're ranked higher than us.
Yeah,
I will never understand.
We earned that 22.
So sly. So proud of them.
So then after we play Pitt in Morgantown, we're going out to Lubbock, Texas. Do you know who's in Lubbock?
The Red Raiders.
Yep. April 19th, 20th, and 21st, we play the Texas Tech Red Raiders at their place. 7:30 p.m. Friday, 3 p.m. Saturday, and 2 p.m. Sunday. And then we're going to go on up to University Park, PA, to play Penn State on April 24th, Wednesday, April 24th at 5:30 p.m. And then we bring it on back to Morgantown to play Baylor April 26th through 28th.
Very nice. And then the 30th we play Pitt again in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
All right.
So, that's gonna be a fun week, fun month
for sports.
But you know, this week is gonna be real interesting. Just overall sports.
We promise next week. Oh my god, next week.
Next week
is all over.
Shut up. We're not going to address it until next week. Because I am.
We'll start crying. It'll be fine.
I'm too fragile. I'm a woman. I'm too weak.
So
fragile.
So here's the tea. Here's the deal, people. At the end of last semester, I sobbed like a baby over the college football playoffs picking thing, and I cried for the kids from Florida State. Mm-hmm. Kaylee will be crying for ourselves at the end of this episode.
Yeah, this is going to be the first and only time I cry on this podcast. And it's not going to be pretty.
Tea, period, so fun, you. So sly.
So, stay
no
tuned
crying.
For our last episode coming this week. And you can listen at thebaonline.com/podcasts or wherever you stream podcasts. But whatever you do, stick around because it goes again.
Get it.
Bye.
What a sad night.